Let's kick it off, or let's transition over to 3M, I should say. We have Nick Gangestad. Did I pronounce your last name appropriately?
That's correct.
Okay. Who is the Chief Financial Officer of 3M. This has been a great story for the last year and change, a real transformational story, I should say. I think Inge Thulin has done a fantastic job of refocusing the entity on core growth and achieving the core growth goals and achieving margin with those core growth, because without margin, it's tough to get investors interested. The capital structure improvements, the dividend increases, the buybacks, has all been very well received by the marketplace. I think that 3M was probably the surprise stock of 2014 in the space, that most people didn't expect the re-rating that it earned, and I would emphasize that it did in fact earn it. I think it was a great story, and it has been a great story for all the right reasons. I think today we'll let Nick give us a bit of a state of the union, and we'll kick in and try to see what the sustainability of the performance has been. Came off a not just a good year, but a good quarter most recently. Why don't we start, Nick, with a bit of a state of the union and tell us what you're seeing around the world, and then we'll go into some of the key questions.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. It is an exciting time at 3M. The strategies that were laid out two years ago, we're seeing them come to fruition. We also laid out, in November 2012, financial objectives that we were striving towards and holding ourselves accountable for, that we could grow organically 4%-6%, deliver earnings per share growth of 9%-11%, free cash flow of approximately 100%, and a return on invested capital of 20%. 2014 was a year where we met or exceeded all four of those financial objectives. It's a good year for 3M, and we were pleased with our performance. It's also a time where we continue to see opportunity. Opportunity in our businesses. Part of our strategy in 3M has been focusing more focus on prioritization, prioritizing where we're investing our resources, and prioritizing in a way to achieve the organic growth that we're seeing, as well as the margins that we're seeing in the company. On the capital structure that Scott alluded to, we started to lay a little of that out in 2012, and then late in 2013 announced some more advancement in our thinking on our capital allocation and capital structure strategy. Right now, over the five-year time horizon of 2013 to 2017, from a capital allocation standpoint, we're projecting between $20 billion and $22 billion to be devoted to share buybacks, and between $5 billion and $10 billion to be invested in mergers and acquisitions. Our first priority when it comes to capital allocation is really investing in the business. We have a strong organic business, and we're investing in research and development. Part of our plan over the five-year time horizon is increasing our investment in research and development from 5.5% to 6% of revenue. We're also investing in M&A, excuse me, CapEx, as a way to enhance our manufacturing capability. In the 2015 plan, we're projecting that we will be growing organically between 3% and 6%. We're projecting between a 7% and 11% earnings per share growth. We're having some of the headwinds that other companies are seeing. FX clearly will be a headwind for us, and from an original range that I laid out in December, estimating that FX would negatively impact our earnings per share between $0.10 and $0.20, we see that at the high end of a $0.20 net of hedging impact to our earnings per share. On the flip side, we're seeing commodity prices coming in better than what we originally projected. In December, I'd put out a range that I expected commodities to, our raw material pricing to be helping us between 15 and 25 cents, and we still see that at the high end of the, approaching the high end of the range that that we've put out. And then finally, pension. Pension has been a tailwind for 3M for the last 2 years. And in 2015, two changes occurring. One, the end of 14, we adopted a new mortality table. 3Mers living longer, good news and bad news there. Bad news is it increases our liability. And the what's happening with interest rates and therefore our discount rate. Those two things in combination will be having approximately a 20 cent earnings per share hit on from our increase in pension expense. All those things in, some of the things that will be driving up earnings per share in 2015, organic growth we're expecting to be adding to earnings per share. We're also seeing opportunity for increased productivity that will be enhancing our margin in 2015. We were projecting and continue to project a 50 basis point improvement in operating margins driven by productivity. And all of those things in combination bringing us to the 7 to 11% earnings per share growth that we're projecting. Scott?
Okay. Yeah, no, good summary. But one of the things that I always get asked about when when I'm out visiting with our clients is, what's changed in 3M? You know, how has Inge Thulin changed the culture, and why all of a sudden is this entity that, you know, so many of us can remember for so many years didn't perform to expectations? I've followed the stock in some way, shape, or form since 96, and there was more years of missing targets than years of making targets, if you go back, and Inge seems to have brought a level of accountability and results that prior CEOs had struggled to achieve. I mean, can you help us understand culturally how the firm has changed?
Culturally, Scott, there's been certainly, even before Inge, an increase in our sense of accountability. So I'll say that's been around for a number of years, a desire to win and an edge that we have in 3M to want to perform and take the actions necessary. I think if you're asking what are some of the differentiators that we're seeing in the last 2 or 3 years that are contributing to what you're seeing, prioritization is probably the number one thing I'll put out there, that there is clear alignment across the company about our priorities, about where we're investing, where we're not investing, and putting the investments in where we're convinced we're going to get the returns and the financial performance. And that has been a bit of a change from where we have been. Having clear line of sight on what we need to execute on, that's been there, but I think in the last 3 years, we've had even a sharper focus on that as well.
We don't have to talk about oil and gas with you guys, which is a breath of fresh air, but we do need to talk about currency, as you referenced in your comments. I think people are very comfortable building into their models a first derivative impact of currency and saying, hey, it's going to be 20 cents. Where they start to get uncomfortable is the change in global dynamics and trade dynamics. Is that something that you can address, that, you know, is there a risk that you see some competitors that come out of different regions with different currency advantages that start to use that advantage to their benefit, or does it just not matter because your asset base is so aligned with your revenue base now that you're able to be that local supplier in all the ways that they are as well?
Yeah, over the years we've been putting a focus to align our asset and manufacturing base with our revenue base to create a natural hedge to FX. Of course, there are opportunities that with a strong U.S. dollar that competitors that have a manufacturing base in a euro, as an example, they now are looking at a lower cost for what they're going to sell in the United States. And that's something we're mindful of, but to date, we're not seeing a change in the competitive landscape.
And same with Canada?
As far as imports from Canada,
yeah,
coming in?
We've got a couple of smaller competitors up there.
We're not seeing anything of significance on that front, Scott.
Fair enough. Let's go to the first audience response question and start to gauge a sense of sentiment around this stock right now, at least sentiment in this room. We've got plenty of people for it to be statistically significant. So let's vote on this. You currently own the stock, yes, overweight. 2 is equal weight, 3 is underweight, and 4 is no, you do not own the stock. And just pick up the handheld device in front of you if you're not used to it, and we'd love to have as many people vote as possible. So let's vote now. Okay. This is similar to what we've seen in the other two sessions. A lot of people that don't own the stock, I imagine that means they're interested in learning more. There's nobody who appears to be short your stock. Okay, let's compare this to prior years. The tick up helps speak to the group's clearly out of favor. I mentioned the previous session that we did have a fair amount of last-minute cancellations. And attendance is down year over year, and I think that speaks to, despite the fact that we have more companies and more market cap here this year, we added a track. I think it does speak to the fact that this group continues to be out of favor, and even your stock at this juncture seems to be impacted by that. Let's go to question two. Is your general bias positive, negative, or neutral? Let's vote on that. Okay. The other two we've had so far today were not very positive at all, so this is a step up from there. Let's look at versus prior years. Definitely a step up in perception versus prior years, on the positive side at least, right? Okay, great. Let's talk a little bit about capital allocation. And, you know, again, for the sake of the audience, give me a little history. You know, 3M always had a mixed history in M&A. You know, there was good and there was bad, and there was lots of times where there just wasn't much. The volume of transactions always seemed to be fairly low, and I think it's particularly difficult when you think about the gross margin profile of your company and trying to find other businesses that have either comparable market dynamics, channel dynamics, and gross margin dynamics is probably fairly difficult. So how do you execute on M&A strategy, or why even bother? Why have that be something that you're going to spend firm resources on?
We see M&A as a way to enhance our organic capability. That we have a number of businesses that, in addition to our organic investments in R&D and manufacturing, we see opportunities to enhance our competitiveness and relevance with our customers through M&A. Sometimes it's a way to accelerate our penetration into a technology. Sometimes it's a way to quickly gain some relevance with a customer segment that could take a long time for us to build. So that's some of the why we keep doing it. Ultimately, we see it as a way to enhance our organic story. Our process is continually looking at strategically where we want to do that, so that there's a rhythm in 3M where we look at where we think we have the most opportunity to enhance our organic story and playbook with M&A, and a rhythm of looking at those, evaluating them, and then matching that up with a pipeline analysis. Once we select an opportunity, a number of opportunities, and then there's a rhythm in 3M going through and analyzing that. You mentioned it must be difficult with margins that we have in our base business in 3M to match that, but let me describe how we think about it. And When we think about our M&A targets, one of the ways we go through this is we look at targets and how they match up with 3M's four, what we've assessed as our four fundamental strengths. Let me spend a minute going through those. First of all, technology. Part of how we think we add value in 3M is that we can take multiple technologies and combine them in ways that some of our competitors can't, to come out with solutions that add value to our customers. The second way with technologies that we add value is we can have a technology, and we're able to commercialize that technology in multiple markets or multiple businesses because of the breadth of the markets that we serve. When we're looking at an M&A target, we're looking at it from that perspective of how does the technology that they bring in complement our existing technology and add to that fundamental strength, and how can we extract more value? Second is manufacturing. We consider that as a fundamental strength, that our ability to manufacture efficiently, effectively, to be a low-cost producer, and how will this target take advantage of 3M's manufacturing capability? The third is our geographic presence, so that we have operations in over 70 countries. When it comes us time when we buy a company, we have a network of these operations around the world that can commercialize that product very efficiently. We don't have to add infrastructure around the world in order to do that. Sometimes a target has not been able to fully exploit the opportunity of that product on a global scale. The fourth is the 3M brand and what that represents for value. That's the thought process we internally are going through in analyzing. Some of those lead to revenue synergies that we can generate. Some of them lead to cost synergies that we think we can generate.
Okay, good answer. Let's go to question three, and then let's open it up to the audience. In your opinion, through the cycle, EPS growth for 3M will be above peers, in line with peers, or below peers? That's peak to peak or trough to trough. Above, in line, or below? Let's vote on this. Okay, that's the most bullish of what we've seen so far today. Let's compare it to past years. Fairly substantial shift. That may reflect peers having more oil and gas exposure, or it might reflect 3M doing better than most in execution the past year. Before I open it up to the audience, there's one thing that we didn't dig into in the earnings call, or at least if you did, I didn't hear it. Where is the money? Capital spending keeps going up, and you mentioned internal investment being critical, but what do you think in terms of, we've been in a relatively limited global growth environment for the past, really since the upcycle began in 2010. Where do you see opportunities to invest substantial amounts? Give us some examples. Is it upgrading existing facilities? Is it new capacity? Is it distribution centers? Just give us a sense of where you spend your capital.
Yeah. Our capital, our spending on CapEx runs almost 5% to revenue. There's a few ways we break it out. The first is there are some strategic investments that 3M is making, meaning they're not really increasing our manufacturing capability, but it's investments we're making in things such as innovation centers that are focused on our customers, or some of our spending on our ERP, our business transformation initiative, is part of that CapEx budget that we share. Where we're putting that money, some of it is in, we need to upgrade and continue to maintain our existing capital base. We have manufacturing operations spread all over the world, and there's a portion of that, of our capital budget, that keeps that well-maintained and, in some cases, enhancing the capability to keep it as efficient and as effective as possible. There are some places where we're investing in brand-new CapEx to enhance our growth, that we have new products that are being developed, and we need to have new manufacturing facilities that are capable of producing those new products. And that's when we're doing that, we're trying to line that up as close to the customer as we can. And so much of our decision there on where is driven by where the customer's going to consume the product. We're also investing, sometimes it's just capacity, that we have grown to the point that our existing capability with our existing equipment cannot keep up with that, and we're still making the same product, but we need to increase our capacity. And that's another bucket of our CapEx. And sometimes we use that as an opportunity to up the technology. There's a portion of our technology base of our CapEx that we're intentionally devoting to new breakthrough technologies in manufacturing that gives us an opportunity to invest in CapEx that we think will change our ability to manufacture in a long term. When I look at our CapEx spending around the world, 3 to 5 years ago, we were investing most aggressively outside the United States in increasing our CapEx. We're at a point where we think we have enough capacity outside the United States, and so capacity is not a big driver for us outside the United States right now.
Okay. Just as an aside, when you think about that 5% CapEx percent of revenues, is roughly half of that maintenance CapEx, would you argue?
Approximately a third of that is maintenance.
A third,
yeah.
Okay, that's good. Let's open up to the audience then, please.
Yep.
Lots of big questions out there today. All right, let's go to the next ARS, and if anything pops up, please ask. In your opinion, what should 3M do with excess cash? Bolt-on M&A, larger M&A, share repurchases, dividends, debt pay down, or internal investment? So let's vote on this, please. Dividends. Share purchases, number two. Let's compare that to prior years. Wow, it's shifted. So it's almost doubled.
And I'll note that's after a 35% increase in our dividend in 2014 and a 20% increase in our dividend that
yeah.
we just announced for 2015.
That's amazing. Wow, this is interesting. So let's keep going on this then. Let's go to question five and tease this out a bit. What multiple of 2015 earnings, this is PE, should 3M trade? Let's vote on this. We've only had a few companies, but the answers are changing pretty substantially from last year. Okay, that's the highest of what we've seen so far today. Let's compare that to prior years. Yeah, well, look, 29% of the people last year said you should trade 13 to 15 times, just 8% this year. 3-year average is closer to 50. So there's been a re-rating of your stock that people feel like generally the audience thinks is permanent. Let's finish up on the last one then. What do you see as the most significant investment issue for 3M? Core growth, margins, capital deployment, execution. Let's vote on this. Okay, core growth 50%, margins 23%. Let's compare it to prior years. Wow, last year was 70% core growth. Interesting. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about margins, because the pushback that we've had in the past on 3M has been limited upside to margins, company that culturally likes to spend away the upside and limit what they're willing to show you. But in 2014, we saw good margin performance, very good margin performance. Help us understand, again, getting to that, my first question was around cultural change within the entity. I mean, how do you, at the C-level suite, think about margins, the importance of margins, and showing expansion of margins each year? How do you think about that?
Scott, there's a few things I think about on margin. First of all, we're a company, 3M's a company that likes to get better. We like to, how can we do this more efficiently, more productively? And so internal to what you see when we talk about our results each quarter, each year, there's a lot of effort going on to enhance that margin through increased productivity. But the other side of that equation is, what's the right reinvestment rate of that increase, what we've just delivered of increased margin. So that there's always this short-term, long-term bounce discussion that we're going through about what should we be doing as investments to enhance our relevance in the longer term with our customers and our ability to innovate for them. So increasing our productivity so we can be investing our investment in R&D. Increasing our productivity so we can be investing more in our brand and our capabilities to effectively commercialize our products. So I think of it as a healthy tension, and one that 3M has been managing successfully. And in the coming years, I think you're going to see us continuing to on this march of how do we use the different levers that we're investing in right now. We're investing in business transformation and trying to figure out how that will be enhancing our margin in the future. Working on our portfolio and how we're investing in our portfolio as a way to enhance our growth and our margin. And so what I'll tell you, Scott, is it's we don't often like to see things in an either-or world. We're in a world of and, that A, we expand our margin through what we're doing, but also invest it so that we can keep that core growth going into the future.
Right. And you don't see any theoretical maximum to your margin levels where you start to get uncomfortable about how much you're earning and the messaging that sends to either customers or competitors?
Well, there's a number of companies I can point to that are in existence because they want to replicate the 3M business model. They see the success we've had, and their playbook is remarkably similar to 3M of trying to follow us into where we are. I think we have some advantages that we, as long as we keep innovating, keep new products that add new value to our customers, that's how we're going to win in the market. And is there a theoretical point where the margin gets to a point that it makes me uncomfortable? Scott, I'm not even sure how to answer that.
Yeah.
Some products, it would vary by the markets we're in.
Right. No, that's fair. I was thinking in terms of, you know, in the days when display and graphics was earning such incredibly high margins that it attracted lots of competition and attention by your customers, and that ended up winding down in somewhat of a difficult fashion. And if there's any examples you can think of where you do have to be careful about that.
In that example, if I compare that to our philosophy of, yes, driving margin, driving productivity, but also then investing for the future,
yeah,
that philosophy maybe could have played out a little different in the case of the optical film.
That's a fair question or answer. I'm sorry. Let's make sure we go back out to the audience. And Jeremy, why don't you take one in the corner?
You've been able to capture some modest price increases. I was just wondering if you see that continuing, and if so, what drives that going forward in this environment?
3M has been seeing price increases for several years, and there's multiple drivers. There's a core amount of price growth that we see consistently because of our innovation engine. The fact that we're coming out with products that add more value to our customers gives us a portion of the price growth that we see. Another driver that we see of pricing that comes and goes is the impact of FX. In particular, in developing parts of the world, when the U.S. dollar strengthens, we often have the pricing power to raise the local currency pricing to offset some of the negative impact from that FX movement. If I use last year as an example, approximately half of our total price growth was coming from the FX movement. As we look into 2015 and we see much of the FX movement in developed markets, where the U.S. dollar has strengthened against the euro, as an example, we don't have the same equation that occurs there, that there's not as much price growth that occurs as a result of FX movement. The core price growth that we've been experiencing is really a result of the innovation and the value that we continually regenerate for our customers.
Thank you. On China, you've had some solid growth. Obviously, the region is, in a macroeconomic perspective, not as strong as it once was. Could you just touch on how you see 3M performing in that region going forward?
Yeah. We had a period of time where the China economy was growing so quickly that 3M was able to grow right along with that. We entered a period where the growth was not as strong in the Chinese economy, and that helped us better understand our own capabilities to grow in China. What we're seeing now is an increased confidence in our capability to grow. It's still one of the fastest-growing economies in the world, an increased confidence in our ability to grow at that pace or faster. This slight slowdown in the economic growth in China has helped sharpen our focus on what we need to do better. We've done that, and we're increasingly confident in our ability to grow there in the coming years.
Thank you.
I think one of the challenges with a company like 3M, you've made such broad investments around the world. You're one of the first and largest companies that we cover in Brazil, for example. You do have a reasonable presence in places like Japan, where other companies we cover just don't even gain entry to that marketplace. With what's gone on globally, not only with oil prices, where oil-rich countries are not going to be spending the money they once did, but oil-consuming countries may be offsetting that and spending more. We're seeing Europe pick up, for example. How do you manage your capacity? Because this is fairly unprecedented, I think, at least, as far as having such divergence around the world of end markets and regions. How do you manage having such a large fixed cost base? Because you are backward integrated to a large extent, and so you do oftentimes have a chemical plant that goes along with a paper roll stock and everything else. How do you manage that?
In most cases, we don't have a supply chain that is one where we don't have a supply chain that we make day-to-day, week-to-week movements based on fluctuations in the market. When we do see changes on the scale, what we've seen in the last five or six months, those create opportunities for us to reevaluate our supply chain. When you're talking capacity, I'm thinking that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, sure.
That we look at is there an opportunity to be shifting more manufacturing for a particular product from the United States to another part of the world? That analysis is an ongoing rhythm. That activity has been more heightened in the last 4 months in 3M and of what we're analyzing. But to your earlier point, often it's not just a single issue. It can be a multiple point in the supply chain, and it's not just as simple as, well, let's make less in this factory and more in this other factory. It often has some derivative implications there.
It just seems, I guess, part of the nature of my question is the complexity has increased considerably, whereas you almost have to make, whether it's Salesforce, product, supply chain, you almost have to make more rapid decisions now than ever in the past. And most corporates, or most companies, I should say, are used to making having annual forecasts and annual plans and annual CapEx budgets and not thinking in terms of the volatility being so large that you almost have to do financial planning on a quarterly basis more exacting. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, it actually plays into some organizational changes that we're making in our company. If we had remained a largely decentralized company in how we manage our supply chain, meaning a particular country or a particular business making independent decisions about how that supply chain is managed, it could quickly reach a complexity level that through inertia almost nothing happens. But as an example, in the last year, we've changed our supply chain model for EMEA, for Western Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Central East Europe, that we have one centralized organization and function that's planning the supply chain for the entire area and not allowing individual decisions to be made in isolated parts in our business. So having volatility like we're having right now plays into the structure that we've put in place there, and we're seeing the fruits of that.
Interesting. Okay, let's go back to the audience. Okay, quiet morning in Q&A. Since we only have a few minutes left, let me push it back to you. What should we be asking? What are the smartest investors asking you, and the people that really get the 3M story and understand what you guys are doing? Let's assume we're the dumbest people. What are the smartest people out there asking?
I don't want to assume that, Scott, but I often get some... Here's a few areas that we haven't talked about. Business transformation, as an example. Let me take 45 seconds to talk about that. I've talked about centralized versus decentralized. 3M's had a long track record of quite decentralized processes, quite decentralized systems, and 3 or 4 years ago started down a path of, we are going to transform our business processes, implement a new ERP system that allows us to manage our operations, our interactions with our customers, our supply chain in a way to bring about the most value we can. And understanding the potential for how transformative that can be to 3M, I think, is something some people may not appreciate going into the future. Research and development. Questions about how well we really know the return on investment we're getting on research and development.
Yep.
There's a bit of science there, and there's a bit of art that we have. And I always find those some insightful questions and discussion we get into about how does 3M think about its return on investment on that pretty significant investment mode. And it's one that we've been spending time on about We have multiple types of investments in research and development, coming out with product line extensions to enhance our current portfolio all the way to new breakthrough innovative technologies, disruptive technologies. And part of our view of that return is that return actually varies by the businesses we're in. There's some businesses where the best thing we can do is just keep coming out with more line extensions, that we get better return on that. And there's other businesses where we get very little return on line extensions, and we're shifting those more to the disruptive technology. So it's we're trying to take that analysis to a new level.
That's interesting. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Nick. Good
luck
to you.
Thank you, Scott.
We'll wrap it up.